I doubt any Fianna Fáil councillor with ambition would oppose Micheál Martin's candidate. Watch the ploughing closely to see if Pierce Doherty of Sinn Féin is pressing the flesh, says Donald. Yeah, we'll see what happens to Sinn Féin on Saturday. Anyway, if you have a view, get in touch with us on the show on 066 712 3666. You can text and WhatsApp us on 083 300 300. We want to hear your views coming into us on the programme this morning. Now, next up, I want to talk about renewable energy and the, I suppose, long-awaited ambition to have offshore wind off the Kerry coast as well as coast all over the country of Ireland. The DMAP, the Draft National Designated Maritime Area Plan for Offshore Renewable Energy, has been launched in the last number of days by the government. It will serve as a strategic plan setting out the development and management of offshore renewable energy resources along our coastline. And it would be a framework for the growth of maritime renewables, of which a lot has been talked about, but not much has been delivered on yet. With me in the line to talk about this is Minister for State at the Department of Climate, Energy and the Environment, Timmy Dooley. Minister, good morning to you and thanks for joining me on the programme. I know you're probably at the ploughing or on your way to the ploughing, but I want to take you offshore this morning. Tell me about the stage that we're at and what will this do to bring the reality of more renewable energy offshore in this country?
Well, good morning, Gerry. I'm still down in Cork. We had the Fianna Fáil think in here, but I am on my way to the ploughing. But listening to the kind of the run into this, we better be very careful, because listening to the way that your listeners react to politicians generally, I better be very cautious. No, like what the government have decided over in the last probably 10 years is a recognition that many of the sites onshore that are suitable for wind energy generation are kind of already developed. So many people don't want turbines onshore anymore. They don't want them close to their home. So what we have to now look at for the next wave of electricity generation is to look at the opportunity offshore and try to put wind turbines well out into the, in the case of Kerry or Clare, well out into the Atlantic. And there's different technologies there at the minute. And you'll see in other countries where they have been successful, where the waters are shallow, they've identified sites and they have built wind farms out into the ocean, and that's really what we are trying to do. So what we launched last week was the first phase of the identification of suitable sites that are around our shoreline, where the wind blows in a very significant way, and where we can identify areas where the water is relatively shallow that we can put fixed bottom wind turbines in place, and also then to look at the potential for areas where you can actually have floating wind turbines, a little bit similar to some of the oil rigs that are in the North Sea, where the mechanism for drilling down into the seabed in the case of oil and gas, actually the platform floats on the surface of the ocean. So we have to look at all of that. And this is the first phase, but it's trying to identify those suitable locations. The next phase of that then obviously will be to go through the planning permission and the various permissions that have to be gotten in relation to the seabed use, etc. And then go to the marketplace and identify companies that are prepared to bid for the auctions, spend their money, together with some of the state's money, in generating electricity in a clean and a renewable way. And what that will help to do, two things. One, it could take away our dependence on oil and coal and gas for generation of electricity, but it will also help to alleviate this issue, which many people are, it's the same in Kerry as it is in Clare and many other counties, they just don't want turbines on the land or close to their homes anymore. So it's a kind of a double win, really, if we can get it up and running.
Okay, where is the technology, or what's your understanding of where the technology is for this one? And I'm asking that question for two reasons. Number one, the ability to place either floating or fixed terminals off the west coast in very rough seas, perhaps maybe out far, or would it have to be in closer? And secondly, our national grid and the ability of it to accept the amount of energy coming from these wind farms.
Yeah, so those are two very important questions. And the first one in relation to where the technology is, Gerry, those turbines that can be effectively put into the seabed, the technology is very much up and running there. And you see, for anybody that has maybe gone to the continent in recent times and flies over Scotland or flies over the Netherlands or Denmark, you will see along their western shoreline where they have fairly, shallow waters, you will see arrays of wind turbines in the hundreds. So that technology is there. Where the technology has a little bit to go is in relation to the floating. You're right in terms of the platforms and their ability to float and manage the very testing conditions that are off the West Coast out there. The difficulty at the minute is if a gearbox goes in one of these turbines or there's any kind of repair work, if you have a period of 2 or 3 weeks where you can't get out to them, that's not viable or that's not sustainable. So they're developing the technology to make sure that it's less prone to damage or less of a need to be repaired because the conditions are very testing. But that technology is evolving and there are some floating platforms, particularly off Portugal. There's some up in Scotland and in Norway. So we're obviously looking to that technology and to be part of the next phase. It's costly, but we really have to do it, you know. And it's the next phase of the opportunity.
And the hope would be that we would do it quickly. But are we doing it quickly? I mean, this plan announced in the last number of days, it'll go to public consultation. That won't be back until next year. I'm hearing 2027 for the next phase of development there. And this is all. There was a very interesting piece written in August by Owen Burke Kennedy. In the Irish Times, where he pointed out that the first offshore wind farm in this country, Arklow Bank 1, the ribbon was cut by then Taoiseach Bertie Ahern in 2005. Scotland didn't have a single wind farm. Now Scotland has 10 large offshore wind farms with a cumulative capacity to generate 4.3 gigawatts of electricity, making its offshore wind industry 172 times larger than ours. We were first. Now we're last, and it's taking far too long to respond to that.
It is, and I would agree with you. We were one of the first, and we sat back on our laurels. But since my appointment, the Taoiseach and Thánaiste made it very clear to me that they want to move quickly on this now, and we need to move away from kind of the navel-gazing that went on over the years. So the work that I have to do with the department is getting the foundation right, which is effectively getting the permissions, getting a plan in place, that allows for the next phase of it, which is the companies to come in and bid for the opportunity to generate electricity. So yes, you're right, we're coming from behind, but we're now, there's a number of projects that are already there and we hope to have them in construction by 2030. And what I want to do then is to give certainty to the industry to say that when the projects that will hopefully generate about 5 gigawatts of electricity between now and 2032 or 33 or whenever they come on board, that as soon as they're up and running, or even before they're up and running, that the large multinationals will see that there's an opportunity to go to the next phase, because we have commitments in our own space that says by 2040 we'll go to 20 gigawatts with 5 by 2031, 32, and then by 2040 to have another 15 gigawatts. So that's going to put a lot of pressure on. But my idea is, let's get started now. Let's not start talking about that in 2030. Let's get the permissions in place. Let's get the frameworks right, and then move on. But because we are behind.
Yeah. Do you foresee wind farms off the shore of off the coast of Kerry and Clare?
I do. I think there's huge opportunities, particularly in the Atlantic Ocean, because, I mean, the strength of the wind is a challenge from a technological perspective in terms of trying to ensure that the technology is able to cope with those conditions. But if that piece can be got right, the abundance of wind and its capacity to generate electricity is enormous. And we can move away then from worrying about oil and coal and gas to generate electricity, which is damaging to our environment generally. And this is clean, it's renewable, and it's just there. But, you know, we have a lot of work to do to harness it and bring it ashore. And there's places like Tarbert where it can be brought ashore, or in Moneypoint on the other side of the estuary. And in fairness to the ESB and other electricity generators are up for that challenge, and they're working towards it, you know.
All right. Timmy, I know you'll be talking about rural Ireland today in your role as Minister for State Department for Agriculture as well, but the budget is coming up quick. The Dáil starting tomorrow. Final question for you. Your party colleague, Minister Jack Chambers, has said that the budget will seek a firm focus on investment. However, there's going to be limited scope for tax cuts and also limited scope to try and deliver on cost of living. There's a survey out this morning that shows that 84% of people are deeply concerned about making ends meet. They're struggling from paycheck to paycheck because of grocery price inflation and other issues, energy, utility inflation as well. Are you out of step? Are you going to do something, or are people just going to have to tough it out for the next 12 months?
Well, budgets are always a very serious challenge. And look, at the government recognises, we all recognise that the cost of living has increased. And what we're trying to do over successive budgets now is to bring up the ability of people to pay. So you are seeing a level of wage inflation. So, and it's slow because you had this massive jump in the cost of living, much of it as a result of coming out of COVID. You had that inflationary pressure, and then you had the war in Ukraine, which has pushed up energy prices and prices generally. And what we have to be careful is that we don't overinflate the economy. We're also deeply concerned about what's happening the world over. We're now entering a situation where the US, for their own domestic reasons, have introduced tariffs on goods that we export. That has a very significant impact on the multinationals who operate out of here. So what we can't have, and difficult in all as it is, what we can't have is a situation where we start spending money in a way that's not sustainable. And we'd all like to be able to give those who vote for us and the public generally greater increases in spending. But if we do that, we have to be able to guarantee that we can do it next year and the year after, because we don't want to get back to the case of where we have to bring in swinging cuts like what had to happen when the economy was in a perilous state back in 2010 and 2011. So any increases in spending has to be measured against our capacity to provide for it into the years ahead. And like with the difficulty in terms of our trading relationship with the United States, it's challenging. So therefore, we have to be cautious and careful so that anything we give people, which is effectively giving them their own money back in terms of the taxes that we generate, we have to be able to be assured that we can do it next year and the year after, and okay, not create a false hope or a false expectation. And I know that's challenging for people, for sure, but our approach is very clear. It has to be sustainable, and it has to be able to be delivered into the long term.
Okay, final question for you, and briefly, just in relation to renewable energy, we talked about DMAPs and offshore. What, if any, implications are there for Shannon LNG and the development of that project from the direction you're going in?
Yeah, so the reality is that we want to move away from fossil fuels. We want to move away from generating electricity from oil, gas and coal. Now, we've managed to do it with coal, but the reality is that where we're generating electricity from wind or from solar, there are times of the day and times of the year where the wind isn't blowing, where the sun isn't shining enough to generate enough electricity. And we do have to generate electricity during that period. And gas will always be part of that mix for well into the future until we develop greater levels of storage capacity with batteries, etc. So LNG is an important part of the government's energy mix. We depend at the moment on two interconnectors into the UK, and the gas comes from the North Sea. And at the moment, about 20% of our gas is coming from County Mayo. But that supply of that is dwindling. So over the next 5 to 7 years, that supply will be gone. So we have to be able to have security, because in the event of some kind of a terrorist attack or even a cyber attack, we're solely dependent on those two interconnectors with the UK. If for any reason either of those were disrupted, we wouldn't be able to turn on the lights in many of our hospitals. We wouldn't be able to heat our hospitals because they're dependent on gas. So we have to have this kind of backup security. And that's what LNG in the Shannon Estuary into the terminal that's proposed at Kerry is all about. So for quite some time, for I would say the next number of decades, we will need gas to generate electricity when the wind isn't blowing, when the sun isn't shining. And we will also need it for heat. So the LNG is a useful component of our energy mix, and the government is very committed to delivering it.
Okay, Minister, thanks very much for taking time to talk about it. Listen, if you meet Jim Gavin at the ploughing, will you remind him to close the gate on the farm?
I will. He's a Clare man. We're well used to closing the gates. Unlike Kerry, though, our farms aren't
as big as you have, and we're not as big.
Here we go. Here's the poor moat. Okay. All right, Minister. Thanks very much for that, Minister Timmy Dooley.
Thanks,
with me on the line, Minister for State Department of Agriculture and Minister for State Department of Climate and Energy as well. If you have a view on what he had to say about that, is it all taking a very long time? We were first. We're now last in the race to get offshore up and running. Are we going to develop it over the next couple of years? We want to hear from you.